everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Vijana Tupo Talks, a podcast by Vijana Tupo Initiative, where we are highlighting the stories of young people, young change makers, movers and shakers who are doing something in their communities, in their countries, and they're creating impact through the Sustainable Development Goals. So I'm going to read out something about today's topic, just to bring it into context before I invite the speaker of today, because I believe it's something that's very, very important to talk about. We have been talking about the SDGs, you've highlighted passion and purpose and connecting your change maker journey to the SDGs. You've talked about how you can start your SDG journey, your SDG change maker journey. And today we're actually talking to somebody who has done that and has spoken to over really many countries. He's going to introduce himself and he's going to read his bio, and he has created a lot of impact. And we are talking about menstrual hygiene. In the recent years, menstrual hygiene has gained attention in the global development agenda. And some of the key concerns have been limited access to clean water, proper sanitation facilities, menstrual and period shaming. If you are in Kenya, if you're listening from Kenya, you would know that last week that we actually had news from one of the national television stations that girls in one county are offering themselves for sex so that they can get period products. That is really, really a sad thing. And SDG 3, SDG 4, SDG 5, SDG 6 all have bits and pieces that can help solve these issues. But how can we help one another, whether boy or girl? How can we come together, whether boy or girl, in ensuring that our girls experience menstruation in dignity? Today, I am joined by a global champion who has braved cultural and societal obstacles to ensure that girls access proper sanitation and facilities during their menstruation. Zian Virji, I hope I pronounced your name well, is the founder and CEO of The Menstruator, a global initiative that is aiming to create a world of menstrual equity, and has served over 8,500 menstruators in 7 countries around the world. He is a TEDx speaker and has had his work featured on major publications around the world, namely BBC Africa, DW Africa, IBO Blog, just to name a few. Zian, it is an honor and a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. I can't wait to hear your story and your journey, how you started this. And I'm just going to hand it over to you to introduce yourself, say a little bit about yourself before we dive into the conversation today.
For sure. Thank you so much, Grace, for that amazing introduction. So as you mentioned, I'm Zian. I'm currently 20 years old. And I'm based here in Canada, but I study at the University of British Columbia. And I'm also the founder of For the Menstruator, a nonprofit I started when I was 15, so around 5 years ago, that works in the space of menstrual health and equity. I think I'll start off by just talking about how I started in this space. So 5 years ago, I was a high school student, and I was required to start up a personal project of my choice. I could have done anything, but I came across this documentary on Al Jazeera named India's Menstruation Man. Mm-hmm. Now, keeping in mind, I don't have any, let's say, sisters. I come from a background, I was born in Tanzania, studied in Kenya, of Indian descent. In terms of my background, I've never really heard about like periods or menstruation, because I mean, I'm a non-menstruator, and unfortunately there's a huge stigma associated with this topic. It's not really taught about to non-menstruators. So first time watching this documentary, and I find out that menstruators in India don't have access to products, and because of this, they don't go to school, don't carry out the daily activities and so forth when they get their periods. And this sort of sparked my curiosity, and I had a conversation with my mom about it. And I found out through that conversation that when she was younger and she grew up in India, she didn't have proper access to menstrual products as well, because she grew up in a single parent family, and they just couldn't afford it at that time. So I was like, whoa, I just watched this documentary and my mom just told me about this. I want to learn more, you know? And I go online and do my research and I find out that over 500 million menstruators don't have access to products. In Africa, an average of 1 in 10 menstruators don't have access. And what this means, again, is they use old rags, cloth, leaves, blankets, sometimes isolate themselves in huts, bleed free, and just a lot of unsanitary materials that are used when they get their period. And I'm like, if every menstruator goes through this, why is this not talked about? Why is no one doing anything about this, you know? I never heard about it in my community. And honestly, this should be a basic need, right? So I'm like, let me do something about this. And that's when I launched, at that time, we're called Affordable and Accessible Sanitation for Women, ASW. And what we, as for the project, I was able to design a reusable product that will last for 6 months. I mean, yeah, 6 months. And I was able to help 22 menstruators in my community in Tanzania. That marked the end of my project. I felt very good about it. I talked about it and got a good grade or whatever. I could have stopped at that point. But then I realized after carrying out this project a few things. So first one was, I realized that the 22 people that I supported, 122 in terms of, and 500 million, there's still so much more work to do, right? So I realized this is a big issue and I want to continue working on this. And I started becoming passionate about this. And second thing I realized was, in reality, because I only provided a product that would last for 6 months, I sort of created, I contributed more to the problem than solving it. Now, what does that mean? I realized that after the 6 months that this product will last, these people would go back into the same old methods that they had. In reality, I just created a dependency syndrome where they'll keep depending on someone else to come help them. So I haven't really solved the root cause of the problem or created a long-term solution. So I'm like, okay, now I realize this. I want to work on this. What's the next step? And so I go back to school and initially we start off a small team. So we're around 7 to 10 people. And what we did was we decided to change two main things. So the first thing we did is we changed our product. So we worked with a local community-based organization called Tunaweza Women in Kenya and in Mombasa. And what we did was we collaborated with them and we were able to design a product that would last for 3 years. That's 100% biodegradable, extremely cost effective, and also embarrassment free. Now our products also include other things that I didn't include before. So things like pairs of underwear. Some of the people that we help with don't even have underwear. Things like antiseptic soap to wash these pads, a waterproof bag, a handbook. Some of these additional things that would really help throughout this process and some factors I didn't even consider before. What we also changed was we changed our approach. So now what we do is when we identify a community, first, we'll just take some time, go in there and try to understand their context. We'll go in there and build a relationship with them, really just do a needs assessment, get to know them. A lot of times, a lot of nonprofits don't do that. They just assume that there's an issue and they want to go solve it. So we really take time to understand their context, build a relationship with them. And then after that, we have an educational workshop. So here's where we teach both the menstruators and non-menstruators about reproductive and sexual health. And we use both like formal and informal educational sort of practices to do that. So you'd see us standing in front of a class and giving our presentation about the biological aspect of it, but you'd also see us sitting in a round circle having conversations and talking about things that aren't taught in class. So things like how to track your period or how to deal with period cramps, or you know, what to do in a situation when you leak in class, sort of things like that that aren't usually taught. After that, we have a stitching workshop. So here's where we actually teach the menstruators that we work with how to use, wash, and then also stitch their own reusable menstrual products. Now, the good thing about this is since we use locally available materials, these menstruators, after the 3 years that this product lasts, they can go to the local market or use some of their existing materials to make their own reusables. And since we're providing them a skill, the skill will never go away, right? It's a lifelong skill. So what we've seen is we are sort of empowering them to have access for the rest of their lives. But more importantly, what we've seen is there's an exponential effect in the approach that we have. So let's say there's a community of 1,000. If we go in there and just help 10 menstruators, provide them this skill, these 10 menstruators, what we've seen is they'll pass on the skill to 10 others, and those 10 will pass on to 10 others. And then eventually the sort of the whole community is able to have access to all of these skills and eventually products. And we've empowered a community. So yeah, we, after the stitching workshop, we end with a celebration review phase where we just celebrate and review the impact of our work and see what worked, what didn't work, get feedback. And then we move on to another community. So keeping all of this in mind, over the last 5 years, we've been able to support, I got to update that bio, but we've been able to support 12,500 people who worked in 8 countries. And we've had an amazing team of over 160 young volunteers all over the world. So yeah, it's been a really exciting journey. And there's every day I'm learning something new and always trying to improve some of our approaches. Obviously, this issue varies in different contexts. You just mentioned in Kenya, menstruators are trading sexual activity for products. In places like South Asia, it's a whole other different issue. Here in Canada, it's a whole other issue. So it's every context, sort of this issue is there, and there are menstruators that don't have products because of multiple reasons. And then we sort of figure out how to contextualize some of the solutions that we provide. Yeah.
Great. Wow. Your journey started when you were 15. I mean, that's incredible. It's incredible how young minds can come up with things that grow and create a lot of impact, just like yours. You've just mentioned that it's actually 8,000 plus girls around the world are benefiting from what you're doing. That is powerful and so, so impactful. And as you've mentioned, you've said that every community, every country has this problem in their own context. So I love that you've mentioned that you approach it, each community or each country or any area that you're working with, create a relationship with them and then understand the problem from their own eyes. Because it is true, sir, that these societal issues come from different perspectives. Sometimes it's because of poverty, sometimes it's because of just not being able to afford it, or because of taboos that are in the community. So thank you for that. Now let's go to, I'm going to connect that to the second question, which is about period poverty, which is what you're working on. And in your context, what, in your own understanding, what can you say period poverty is? Understanding as a young man, because again, you're giving your view from a different perspective. A lady would give it a little bit different, but what is your understanding of period poverty? What exactly is this?
So the way I personally look at period poverty is, I mean, I just break it down into two, right? So first half periods, for most of the listeners, I'm sure most of us know, but periods are sort of a biological process as part of the reproductive health system that every menstruator goes through in a cycle of around 28 days. And almost half the world's population gets periods, you know. Yes. And then the poverty aspect comes when sort of the way I look at it is, because of not having access to products, these menstruators, let's say menstruators that go to school, let's say they don't go to school, and because they don't go to school, then it's hard for them to get employment in the future. And because they don't get employment in the future, then they're trapped in this vicious poverty cycle that's passed on from generations to generations. So the way I look at it is, how something so normal and beautiful as the menstrual cycle, because of going through a normal biological process, not having access to products that can support this biological process, these menstruators are then trapped in this vicious poverty cycle. And there are obviously so many factors that come in place, so political factors, cultural factors, social factors.
Yes.
That come into place to sort of cause this whole big issue. So that's the way I look at it.
Thank you. And it is true what you're talking about. It's like a vicious cycle of things that keep happening and they keep happening. And I can't really get over how you started your work at 15. And I just want to ask, how was it as a young man at that time? You are a teenager and you have a project that is about periods. How was it embraced by your fellow mates? How was it embraced by your fellow classmates? And as you answer that question, maybe you can connect that to the challenges that boys and men face in trying to solve this specific issue. Because I know for many communities, if, for example, most especially if you are solving this challenge in an African country, there's a lot of taboo about it. There's a lot of taboo around it. And so when men are involved in it, there's a little bit of question mark. So how was it for you?
For me personally, very difficult, I'd say. I mean, one, being a young person, and then two, being a non-menstruator trying to solve or work towards solving this issue, right? So I got everything from people in my community passing on comments, getting rejections when I'm searching for funding, when I'm presenting to people, when going to actual communities. There have been a lot of times where either I've had to step out of the room and I'm not able to conduct a workshop because people aren't comfortable having a conversation with a non-menstruator, or where I've been giving a presentation and men have walked out of the room because they don't feel comfortable having this conversation. So everything from that to people passing comments, I've heard the most like random comments that you can think of, right? And got a lot of like laughs and just people making fun of me for working on something like this. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, I know why I started working on a project like this, and I've sort of always connected to that, and I understand how important this issue is. And me being a non-menstruator of any race, gender, background, I think this is something everyone should be working on, honestly. Like, this is, if you think about it, none of us would even be alive if it wasn't for the reproductive cycle and periods in that essence. So I think this is something that should be so normalized and everyone should be talking about it. The way I look at it now, though, is I sort of take it as an advantage being a non-menstruator. I use this to my advantage in the sense that I can inspire other non-menstruators to be more involved in this space. Mm-hmm. And even when we're working with menstruators themselves, if they see I'm comfortable talking about this, they also feel like, yeah, if he's talking about it, why can't we talk about it, right? It's something so normal. So I sort of use this and my voice to bring some of these important conversations to light and just really inspire people to start working on solutions. And that includes just having conversation. You know, that's a place to start, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. And you have definitely inspired people, having that you have spoken to different audiences, young people around the world. That means that what you have done has truly inspired a lot of people. Now, my last question to you is, I know you've mentioned it, but I would like you to maybe expound on it a bit more. You've talked about this being an issue that is affecting our society. It should be embraced by all of us. Like, all of us should be working together to ensure that we have found a solution for it. So my question to you is, what impact is created by men, or should be created by men, in terms of this specific issue? And how far should men and or boys work hand in hand to ensure that the issue of menstrual products, menstrual hygiene, every issue that is related to that is solved?
So unfortunately, the society that we live in, I feel like in a lot of places of or positions of decision making, we have non-menstruators there. So be it in places like government, which are mostly sort of there are mostly non-menstruators there. These people make policy. So if these people understood what it's like to get their period, honestly, they would, everywhere around the world, they would be access to free products, right? But they just don't understand it. I remember a story in which we were working with a group, and one of the menstruators was talking about her own experience, and she said that her family can afford access to products, but the issue is that because the person that earns the income in the family is a non-menstruator, her father, she has to ask money from him to buy some of these products, but he just doesn't understand it. And because this issue is so taboo and it's so stigmatized, they can't even have that conversation, and which is why she doesn't have access to products. So Everything from the government level to a single household and a single family, unfortunately, non-menstruators, because of the way society is built, is they're still in places of decision making. And if they just came from a place of empathy, such as me, where I'll never be able to understand what it's like to get my period, but I'm trying to empathize, I'm trying to really understand, right? So if they just came from a place of empathy and took a moment to understand what it's like to get your period and then what it's like not to have access to these products and how that has an effect on you, I think this world would have been a better place. We wouldn't even have had to be having this conversation right now. You know, this should have been a thing of the past where we've solved this issue. So I'm definitely optimistic in the sense that there is progress being made, but we still have a long way to go, and there's still menstruators all over the world that don't have access to products, and in a lot of cultures and other places around the world, this is seen as a taboo and is so stigmatized. So a lot of more work to do, but I'm optimistic, and I think each non-menstruator, especially when they're in places of power and decision making, should really understand this issue and come from a place of empathy and kindness. Yeah.
Amazing.